This was not the first that Jim Black had heard of Kevin Mitnick. Tall and wiry, with an appeal suggestive of Montgomery Clift, the 47-year-old LAPD computer crime detective had loosely kept track of Mitnick for years. When the call came from Pierce College, Black's hunch was that this was more than a simple matter of copying some software from the computers of a junior college. He had heard enough about Mitnick through the years to suspect that he might be up to something big. This time, he wanted to see Mitnick and his friend spend some real time in prison. Black had heard that Mitnick didn't like jail one bit. The detective suspected there wasn't much that would disrupt the young man's impulse to seek control of electronic devices, other than a healthy dispensation of justice. He dropped everything to work full-time on the case. Black had begun to specialize in computer crime in 1982, when two embittered employees of Collins Food, a restaurant chain, were accused of planting two logic bombs in the company's computers. The insidious software was designed to destroy payroll, inventory, and sales records, and it was only an accident that led an employee to discover the potent little pieces of code before they did their damage. Black had begun to handle other aspects of fraud 8 years earlier. He was working auto repair fraud when he was asked if he'd like to join in the Collins Food case investigation. He spent several years on the case, and although the prosecution couldn't gather enough evidence to convict the suspects, the challenge of working a case in which someone had the ability to do something so destructive without leaving a trace was such an interesting departure from routine investigative work that he moved into the department's fledgling computer crime unit. By 1988, Black's division was one of a dozen or so units around the country devoted to computer fraud. Black saw people like Mitnick not just as a general threat to computer systems, but as a personal threat. Mitnick was known to take direct revenge on members of the law enforcement community. Black spoke with one of Mitnick's former probation officers, who said the telephone service at her home had simply gone dead one day. But when she called Pacific Bell to report the problem, the company told her that according to its computer, her service was just fine. It had taken her days to convince the phone company that her line was really dead, and still longer to get it fixed. Black didn't want to take any chances. He made special arrangements with TRW so that anyone attempting to see his credit rating would have to go through extra steps. The telephone company made similar provisions for Black's home telephone service. The day after the initial call, Black was at Pierce, talking to the staff and administration. That afternoon, he ran a search on both Mitnick and DeSico. DeSico's record showed several outstanding traffic warrants. Curiously enough, Mitnick came up clean. Black put in a call to Bob Ewan in the DA's office, and Ewan told him about the Santa Cruz case. When Black called the Santa Cruz Police Department, he learned that Mitnick had pled guilty to a misdemeanor 8 months earlier and was currently on probation. Black pulled driver's licenses for Mitnick and DeSico and called the letter carrier to see who received mail at 8933 Willis No. 13 in Panorama City. The mailman said that Mitnick got mail there. So did Bonnie Vitello, Mitnick's wife, and Shelley Jaffe, Mitnick's mother. Black's next call was to the local FBI office. An agent there said he had gotten a call from the FBI office in Baltimore a few months earlier, linking Mitnick to the penetration of a National Security Agency computer from the Hughes Radar Systems Group in El Segundo. But as far as he knew, the L.A. office had no open case on Mitnick or DeSico. A few days later, Black and a deputy district attorney met with Schleppenbach at Pierce. They told Schleppenbach that before and after each class, he should watch both suspects and jot down anything that looked suspicious. Black's next step was to call the local digital office and describe the problems at Pierce. An engineer from Digital's Los Angeles office took on the job of analyzing the tape DeSico had left in the college's computer and monitoring the duo's computer activity at the school. On March 3rd, surveillance began. Black wanted their every movement accounted for. First, the campus police took up the watch. At 6:30 that evening, plainclothes officer Kenneth Kurtz watched Lenny DeSico arrive at the computer science lab, sit down at a computer, and begin to type. 30 minutes later, Mitnick arrived. Once Schleppenbach arrived, the students in the lab moved to the lecture room. DeSico spotted Mitnick and sat next to him. For the next hour, the two students watched the instructor, occasionally leaning over to whisper to one another. At 8 p.m., both Mitnick and Aseko bolted from their chairs and beat the rest of the students to the adjacent lab. The officers sat nearby and watched as Mitnick began helping his stumped peers with their assignments. Aseko got into a conversation with Schleppenbach, and by way of explaining his thorough knowledge of VMS, the operating system for Digital's VAX computers, told him that he worked at TRW on a VMS system. Kurtz left a few minutes before class was to be dismissed and waited outside the building for Mitnick and Aseko to appear. At 9:45 p.m., Mitnick came out and began to walk the perimeter of the computer science building. Kurtz climbed onto a roof and watched as Mitnick re-entered the building. About 3 minutes later, Mitnick and Aseko emerged together. Kurtz hopped from roof to roof of adjoining buildings. He scrambled down in time to see Aseko get into his small brown Toyota and drive away. Mitnick drove in his car from a separate exit. Black and his partner picked up the surveillance from there. They followed Mitnick's black Nissan Pulsar as it traveled a 7-mile stretch of the western edge of the San Fernando Valley. By the time Mitnick reached a smaller, winding road in Calabasas, the detectives noticed that he seemed to be following another car. Both cars turned into a parking structure beneath a Home Federal Savings and Loan building. The cars parked out of sight, but Black saw Mitnick walk toward the front. He looked up and saw a light go on in a second-story office. A man with dark hair stood in front of the window. The light went out. The officers left just before midnight, making a quick swing through the parking area. The Toyota and the Nissan were the only cars there. For the next month, Black and his partner continued the surveillance. On occasion, the two detectives had help from the department's Special Investigative Section, or SIS, which carried out most of the sophisticated surveillance needed by the LA Police Department. Officers in SIS usually busied themselves with violent criminals, and although these two suspects posed no physical threat, SIS was needed to carry out the fine art of successful tailing. With 10 to 12 men, two to each unmarked car, Camaros, Volkswagen Bugs, and pickup trucks, the officers carried out a tag-team approach to its surveillance. As one car peeled off, another picked up, sometimes accelerating to 100 miles per hour to catch up to the suspects, but always staying at least a couple of blocks behind them. The two suspected software pirates stuck to something of a routine. After leaving the campus on Tuesday and Wednesday nights at about 10 p.m., they would drive to the Calabasas office building. They frequently stopped along the way at a Fatburger, an L.A. fast food chain famous for its tacky decor and gigantic burgers. This Fatburger outlet was squeezed into an L-shaped pink stucco mini-mall between a 7-Eleven and a taco restaurant. The two would emerge from Fatburger laden with bags. Judging from the sheer volume of food the two carried upstairs, Black figured they were packing in for a long night. It would have come as a surprise to the two police officers to learn that Mitnick was supposed to be on a strict diet. As far as his wife, Bonnie, knew, her husband subsisted on a low-calorie menu consisting of oatmeal for breakfast, 2 ounces of turkey for lunch, and a salad for dinner. It was a sensible diet for someone with heart palpitations who frequently checked himself into nearby emergency rooms with chest pains and kept a drawer at home filled with medical insurance claims. Not surprisingly, the regular pit stops at Fatburger had been the downfall of many Mitnick diet plans. Computers and eating went together for Kevin, which was one reason he never managed to fall below 240 pounds for very long. The two police officers got permission to use a residential driveway across the street. They tucked their car as far back in the driveway as they could while still keeping a clear view of the insurance office. Occasionally, one of the suspects would venture outside, look to his left and right as if preparing to cross the street, then slip back inside. The vigils livened up on the occasions that Mitnick came outside, crossed the street, walked a few paces to the Hotel Country Inn, and began using the payphone in the lobby. Mitnick's payphone sessions would last about 20 minutes. Whatever Aseko was doing inside seemed to be related to Mitnick's time on the payphone. Aseko would walk to the landing outside the office and peer down the street toward the hotel. One of the more difficult things to establish was just what office door of the Calabasas building the two suspects were entering. The manager of the Home Federal Savings and Loan branch told Black that neither Mitnick nor Aseko worked at the bank. There were at least a half dozen other businesses that rented space there. Two members of the surveillance team were dispatched to the roof of the building, where they lay until they figured out that it was the door to Suite 101, the offices of a company called VPA, which stood for Voluntary Plan Administrators. When Black did some research into VPA, he found that it was a company that administered disability programs for larger companies. The company used a Microvax computer made by Digital Equipment, but notifying VPA that it might have computer criminals in its midst was out of the question. Black didn't know if the company was involved with whatever Mitnick and DeSico were doing. On March 17th, when Black's partner got to work, he received a frantic phone call from Pete Schleppenbach, the Pierce teacher, who wanted to report a bizarre and annoying incident. 5 hours earlier, at 3 a.m., Schleppenbach had been awakened by a telephone call from a man identifying himself as Bob Bright, an officer with campus security. The officer told the bleary-eyed Schleppenbach that he had just apprehended two male suspects who had been caught wheeling heavy equipment out of the computer science lab. He described one as tall and slender, the other as shorter and fat. "That's Mitnick and DeSico," Schleppenbach said. "You've really hit the jackpot with these guys," Schleppenbach said he would come right over. The officer told Schleppenbach that it was a good idea, and that he had just put in a similar call to two other Pierce officials who were also on their way. When Schleppenbach and two other Pierce faculty members arrived at the campus security office, there was no one in sight but one lonely security guard who said it had been an uneventful evening. There had been no burglary, and he had no colleague named Bob Bright. It was a mean and childish trick, but for Lenny and Kevin, it had served a useful purpose. Now they knew they were being investigated. There wasn't much the police could do except log a mischievous phone call. It was clear that Mitnick and DeSico weren't going to make this easy. Black and his partner gathered as much background as they could on the two pranksters. DeSico, at least, appeared to have a full-time job at VPA, as his car would usually stay parked in the garage beneath the building all day. Mitnick, it appeared, was unemployed. In March, Black got a disturbing tip. Someone from inside the police department had heard that Kevin Mitnick was getting ready to start a job in computer security at Security Pacific Bank.